Hello, and welcome to this Resilient Life podcast. Resilient Life is part of peakprosperity.com. It's where we focus on practical and actionable knowledge for building a better future. I'm your host, Adam Taggart, and today's guest is Jennifer Wynn, founder of Wynn Performance Partners, an executive consulting and coaching boutique firm. I've invited Jennifer on the program to talk about career transition. Recent surveys show that most Americans are dissatisfied with their current jobs, and 60% would choose a different career if they could. This desire to change careers is something Chris and I hear often from Peak Prosperity readers, who, in addition to the general job malaise most workers feel, have the additional concern of feeling their expertise and skills may be less relevant in a future impacted by peak oil, or that their industries are at high risk from the slow to no economy forecasted by the crash course. While many yearn for a new career, what they are really seeking is more fulfilling work. Work with purpose and meaning, which is a very important part of the personal resiliency we advocate developing here at Peak Prosperity. Unfortunately, many of those yearning never actually take the steps to transition, as the process seems too daunting or too costly from a time or money standpoint. But there is a methodical process to find your professional purpose, your authentic career, as I call it, and to transition over to it. We're going to discuss that today with Jennifer. And how can I be so certain this process works, you might be thinking? Because I followed it to make my own transition from dissatisfied Silicon Valley executive to fulfilled co-founder of peakprosperity.com. And Jennifer was an instrumental resource to me along that process, which is why I'm so excited to have her join me today. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you, Adam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start by giving our listeners just a quick description of your expertise in career management. Do you mind just giving us a little background?
Sure. I do executive consulting and coaching work. The bulk of that is with companies that hire me directly to work with senior executives, typically director level and above, on leadership, interpersonal dynamics, and communication. But a big piece of what I do, too, is working with individuals on understanding what they are best suited for so that they are able to find a career that is very fulfilling to them and that meets their needs over the long term.
Great. Well, as I mentioned earlier on, we're going to talk about career transition. In addition to being a big catalyst in my journey, you also went through a big career transition yourself years ago. That's true, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, before we start talking at a higher level for everybody listening, just tell us a little bit about the transition that you went through.
I have actually done several major career transitions in my lifetime, and it's partly why when I work with folks, I say, I really have been in your shoes. I know what this is like, and I know how daunting it can be. But I started out in theater. I was a performer, and I did theater and singing and things like that, and I grew up in the Midwest, and I moved to New York, sort of the classic, here I am in New York City, ready to do theater. And I had, you know, moderate success in that, and one of the things I learned is that I didn't really like the day-to-day life of it, the tremendous uncertainty, and have to pick up and go be in some remote location for weeks or months on end. And at that time, I wound up working through the happenstance more than anything else, through doing temp work, wound up working in an investment bank and was just intrigued by what I saw there, and I thought, okay, This is really different, and if I can just figure out what they're doing here, I think this is an exciting environment. And so I worked on the trading floor for a year and a half, something like that, and then wound up going to business school, which is what brought me out to California. I went to Stanford. And then coming out of business school, I was trying to find a way to blend this creative, artistic side of my personality with this business orientation and went into advertising and found that that was not all that creative and didn't pay all that well. So it was not very helpful in paying off all my student loans from going to business school. And so then I wound up working for Charles Schwab for several years, for about 4 or 5 years I was there. And then eventually said, you know what, I'm not quite there yet. I still haven't found that sweet spot. And started another transition trying to get more towards what is it that is really motivating to me. And I went all the way back looking at, like, why did I get into theater? What was interesting about that? And for me, what was fascinating about theater was figuring out the puzzle of what would make a character do this? What would make someone say that? Why would they take these actions? And it was really the psychology of that. That was what was so fascinating. And so when I applied that to the business world, what that led me to is more this area of coaching. What makes one executive much more effective or much more successful than another one? And so it's many of the same things. So my work now, in an odd way, is quite similar to what it was back when I was at theater, where I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what is it that will make this person come off this way and be successful in this career. So in some ways, I've come back full circle, but I'm very fulfilled in my role now because it's playing on all of these strengths and all of the experiences that I've had in my background have come to bear, and they are useful very much in the work that I do now. I draw as much on my theater training as I do on my business school training or my personal experience in a managerial role.
Well, I think it's really important for people to understand that as we go into this conversation we're about to have, it's not just an academic discussion. There's a lot of study and skills and techniques that have been proved out over time by the study of career management, but it's heavily informed by the multiple career transitions that you went through. So you're not just talking at a theoretical level, you're also talking from a point of actually having put this into practice in your own life.
Absolutely.
So let's build on that, because not only do you, I think you have a very valuable perspective to offer from the expertise you've developed in the career management space and the personal experience that you've had in making transition, but you're also familiar with the crash course. You've even attended a private event that Chris keynoted when he was up in Northern California last year. So you understand the issues that our audience is grappling with. You know that they have probably, you know, many of the same concerns that the average person does around career arc and whatnot, but they have this whole other set of concerns on top of it in terms of just, you know, the macro dynamics that are likely to shape the future. Since we're going to focus on career transitions today, as I mentioned earlier, I talk to so many people that contact us directly about their dissatisfaction and where they are in their careers. But even when I go to a cocktail party, a social event, I find that if I just ask one or two questions with minimal scratching beneath the surface, I can get 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 people to admit within a couple of sentences that they probably wish they were doing something different for a living. This sense of life having put you on a path that's probably not your true path is a very, very common feeling. Yet, as I also mentioned earlier, not everybody makes the career transition. And for some people, that's probably the right thing because it is a pretty big endeavor. And it, you know, requires a lot of focus and a lot of commitment to do well. So I guess before we get started about the process itself, do you have any advice on, you know, for those wishing they were having taken a different path, who are the ones that really should be considering making a career transition versus just trying to feel better about the path that they're currently on?
Well, it's interesting in that usually when people come to me, especially if they're in a job, it's a pretty good job, like from the outside. You know, it pays well, it fits their training, if not their passion. And they say, you know, I just feel... I'm happier, I feel like I'm on the right path. Usually the first thing that I would say to them is let's look at a dual approach. One is let's try to figure out what the optimal path for you is. Like what is it may be very, very different. But also what can you do right now to start to maybe adjust what you're doing or tweak your work or maybe get into a little bit different group or expand your responsibilities in a different direction to try to make it more palatable to be where you're at right now if you're feeling that unrest. So I find that many times what will happen is that people, if they just can tweak it, sometimes it's amazing what a small adjustment can do to make you feel more comfortable in your work. And so if we kind of address some of those things that are manageable in their current work, sometimes people say, oh my gosh, like I feel so much more comfortable that I'm actually okay now. I think I do want to stay here. And there may very well be very valuable reasons for not making a big change that have to do with their personal life, what's going on. They may have a new baby at home. They may have elderly parents that they're in the process of trying to, you know, transition them to a new home. Or there's all kinds of life events that might give you a good reason to say, you know, let's hold off on making a big transition right now. However, having said that, I think there's a tremendous value to at least starting the process about thinking, what is the next thing, even if right now isn't the best time?
Well, I think that's a great point, and we're going to get into this more deeply in just a moment, but a huge part of the career transition process is actually, you know, it all starts with a better sense of self-understanding, sort of like what you were mentioning in your theater work, on what really makes this character tick. And of course, by this character, I mean you. All right, so for those for whom considering a career transition may make sense, let's actually move on to the details here. You know, as you know, based in no small part from our work together, I've written a book about the career transition process. So what we're going to talk about at a high level, there is a book that's going to be available by the time this podcast is released on the Peak Prosperity site that people can take a look at. And if this is a topic of interest to them, they'll be able to get the book. And within the book, the career transition process is divided into three stages. Stage one is taking control of your professional future. Stage two is navigating the fallow period. And stage three is making a successful transition. And we'll talk in a moment specifically about what each one of those stages involves. But I'd like to focus right now on the first stage, which in many ways I feel is the most important one. It's where you set the goals and vision for your career switch. And as we talked about, it's all about developing a better understanding of yourself and then using that understanding to create the requirements for the work you're going to go after that's going to be more fulfilling for you. Once you have these insights, you're empowered to start making decisions and taking directive action. So because this is so important, it's very much like, you know, before you build a house, you spend time with an architect and you actually design, you know, the requirements for the house. You actually build a vision and a set of visual plans for the house, and then everybody who's involved in the process uses that to guide their actions. So as we talk about this stage where introspection and self-understanding is really important, you know, these are rough existential questions. You know, questions like, who am I? What do I value? What are my strengths? What fulfills me? Those are very simple questions to ask, but they're very, very hard questions to really answer. What effective strategies are out there for coming to a better understanding of ourselves? What tools, techniques, exercises do you find most helpful in enabling someone to answer these questions?
The exercises that I have found particularly helpful, and I know in reading your book, which is a wonderful resource, so I will give you a plug on that right now, because I have read the whole thing, and I think it's just a terrific, terrific, again, resource for people in making this transition that can feel so daunting. But one of my favorite ones that I tell people to just start with this is a version of this, the seven stories exercise, which is pulled from the 5 o'clock club books, I believe. And the seven stories exercise is one where you just analyze your own life, and you just start with like 20 different things that you say, throughout my life, what were some things that were really absolutely engaging to me? And I encourage clients when they do this to go back to when they were in grade school or any time in their life and just say, what did you get absorbed in? What did you feel really proud of? What did you love doing? And don't worry about if it's something that's important or a big thing. If it was important to you and you think of it and it makes you feel really positive as you relive that experience, then that's one of your stories. Because what happens is people get so bogged down in expectations that others have for them, or a teacher says, oh, you're really good at math, you should do this. Like, I remember being told by in junior high, like, oh, you should really study math. And I was like, well, what could I do with that? And the response is, well, you could be a math teacher. And I thought, I don't want to be a math teacher. And so, you know, but these expectations get sort of shoved onto you, and it can be very hard to shake them off. So if you go back to things that were really, really energizing and really fun when you were younger, that many times the seeds for what is going to be motivating to you in your new career will surface. And that's where, as a career coach, a consultant through this process, I then can, it's much easier for me to help people if I can read through all that, because I can say, oh, I see this kernel here. I see this connection in this. And people often don't see that for themselves. So that process of writing out those you know, you boil it down to seven. You start out with more than that, but you get down to seven that you really analyze in detail. You say, what was it that was exciting about that? Why did I like it? How did I get involved in it? Was it something I initiated? Did someone suggest it to me? What was my role? What was I acknowledged for, if anything, or was it something that was very private? All of that information can really help inform what is going to be an optimal path for you down the road. So I think that that is a really, really good resource of just mining your own background and your own experiences.
That is a great resource, and I just want to underscore two things you mentioned there, because I completely agree with what you've said. And really, at the core of this process, it's really boiling yourself down to the fundamental building blocks, at least right at the beginning, to really ask yourself, my strengths, my attributes, my passions, my values, what are the core things that make up who I am? And then once you understand that, you understand what you are so that you can start looking for opportunities that fit who you are. And you understand who you are not, which makes it a lot easier to start saying no to other opportunities that might be available to you. But as you really begin to understand your true nature, you can more clearly realize just aren't a good fit for you. So in your case, you might have been very skilled at math, but maybe being a math teacher or going down a very quantitative career, just even though you could have, would not be the right thing for you. You also mentioned how we have these expectations foisted on us, and one revelation that was very helpful for me in my transition process, because I still felt pressure as I was leaving my old career and trying to figure out what to do next. I still did feel a lot of pressure to keep some of these doors open that everybody, you know, in my peer set, looked at as great opportunities. And I knew they were on paper. I just didn't quite know yet that they weren't great for me. And of course, going through this process you're talking about helped me begin to realize that. But one thing that really helped was I heard from somebody from a psychological expert that as part of the normal human maturation process, you are supposed to make a shift in how you live your life. And this typically kind of happens around midlife, and it's probably one of the big reasons why people have midlife crises. But you're making a shift from living a life based on others' expectations of you and beginning to then start living a life based on your own expectations of yourself. And I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do here in this career transition process, is to say, yes, my parents had expectations for me, my teachers did, my peers, you know, have all sorts of interests that they're influencing me with. But really, what's important to me at my core? And it might be consistent with those expectations, or it might be completely different. And I'm getting to the point where if it is completely different, I'm okay with that. And then I can then, you know, step forward into a path that feels much more true or authentic to me, without worrying about what other people, you know, may or may not be expecting from me. Would you agree with all that?
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, Adam. And in fact, it's one of the things that I tell people is be very protective of yourself in who you have around you, because it's really hard. Sometimes the enemy of this process can be what I call, quote, people who know you too well. In that, and many times it's family members, it can be longtime friends, and they don't mean to do anything to impede your progress, but they do feel like they know you so well, and they kind of think they know what's best for you. So they're like, oh, you would hate that job, or why would you want to do that? That's crazy. Or you'll never make money doing that. And so it's all this stuff that at a time when you're already really vulnerable, you're just like, oh, no, what am I doing? I'm losing my mind. I think I want to do, I'm not even sure what I want to do, but it's clearly not the right thing. So you do have to really make sure you surround yourself with people who are going to be very open-minded and supportive. So sometimes you do have to kind of take a little break from some good friends and colleagues and just surround yourself with some other folks that are able to see you with, you know, fresher eyes, because it can be hard. And also, as you mentioned, if you are leaving a good job, the opportunities that are coming your way, which tend to be quite similar to your last job, if you're, you know, in a job or transitioning out, you get recruiters' calls or friends. They're going to connect you with stuff that's quite similar. And if you want to do something different, it's really hard to break free of that. And so it's the more you can create sort of space from that, the better. I mean, I remember in my case, after I had left Schwab, and I was really wanting to do something very different, and I thought it's got to be more on the people side of things. I'm not sure what shape that takes. This was like 14, 15 years ago, so the whole executive coaching field was not that known then. It's much more known now. And I said, well, I think it's something in this area, but I wasn't sure. It wasn't really crystallized yet. And at that time, I remember getting a call from a company that was in the mapping business. I think eventually it was merged and bought and whatever, became MapQuest or one of those earlier iterations of the mapping technology. And they liked the fact that I had been in advertising before, and so they were heavily recruiting me to come in and do marketing for that kind of role. And it was hard not to take that meeting because it was so flattering. You know, here's this startup, and this is all so exciting, and they want me to come in, and they really, really want me. And I met with them and got pretty far down the process, and then I thought, I've got to stop. This is not the path I want to go down. And finally, I remember having this sort of awkward phone conversation where this guy who had contacted me and been my main contact to this, and he was one of the founders of this company, and I said, look, I have to step out of this process and remove myself from the process because I think this is not the right path for me. I think it's a wonderful company. It's a fantastic opportunity. But personally, I think I want to go in a different direction. I'm still kind of figuring out what that is, but I think it's more around working with people, around being effective in their work and finding the right career fit for them and learning what makes them really good in that career that fits them and really working more with individuals. And there was this dead silence on the phone. And then he goes, you mean you want to do that, like, as a job? And he was just incredulous. And then he could not get off the phone fast enough after that, you know. And I sat there after this call ended going, oh, my God, I think I just blew, like, the best job opportunity could ever have come my way. What am I thinking? And, you know, just racked with, oh, my God. And then, wouldn't you know it, about 6 years later, guess who's sitting in my office? The very guy who is now out of work, you know, I don't know, that got bought, got whatever. And he was really in this angst about what to do. And he did not remember me. I just casually said, oh, I think we might have met once before. And he goes, really? I don't remember that. So I don't think he remembered, but it was very vivid in my memory. But it was a good lesson in that it felt so awful in the moment, but years later, you know, I kind of had the last laugh.
Oh, that is such poetic justice, though, Jennifer. And and I think is a great underscore for what we're talking about here. What we're not talking about is simply getting another job if you have one job. We're really talking about finding your real true career path. So where you hopefully want to spend the next, you know, either rest of your professional life or you know, the foreseeable future. And to do that, you really have to get rid of a lot of distractions, a lot of temptations that are going to influence you either by, you know, because they're nice and shiny and hot, or because you're maybe giving up some income while you're going through the uncertainty of finding your job and you're feeling those pressures. You've got parents or spouses or peers or whatever pressuring you to go through an open door that they think is good for you. But that's why all this self-introspection is so important, because what you're essentially doing is you are defining the compass points that you're going to use to navigate your career search by. And the better and more clearly you define them, the more confidence you'll have as you kind of go through the stormy, murkier parts of this, that you're heading in the right direction, even though if in the moment it feels a little scary.
And that's one reason too, Adam, that you said what tools are most helpful. Pen and paper are extraordinarily helpful to just write down and get these thoughts onto paper, because that process, and I think you highlighted that in your book as well, is it forces you to just think through it. And sometimes when you see it on paper, it helps bring a lot more clarity to it. Plus, it's much easier then for anyone else to help you, whether it's a career counselor to help you or someone else who's a friend or a colleague or whatever. But to put it on paper gives you something to really work with, and it gets it out of this sort of spinning in your head. People think they're clear in their head when they're thinking about it, and they're actually not at all. And they don't realize that until they start to get it out on paper, and then they realize how much murkiness is really there.
Exactly, and I can tell you from having gone through the process, it's a really painful process. It's really hard, because first you're staring at this blank piece of paper, and you're trying to say, how do I sum up my essence, you know, onto the sheet of paper here? It feels really overwhelming. And then once you actually start writing, it feels awful, because by putting words on paper, it's actually a very exclusionary process. I felt the loss of all the words I wasn't putting on the paper to describe who I was. But as you say, it's really that's the progress you need to make, because what you're doing is you're winnowing down, you're iterating down to something that is a core kernel of truth. And really, the way I found that you do that is by going through the initial pain of just getting something on paper, and it may be completely not accurate, and you feels awful. You don't like what you wrote. You go to bed. You wake up in the morning. You take a look at it, and you say, "Oh gosh, these areas here are totally off base. Let me correct them. Hey, these three actually are. I still feel pretty good." And you put it down again, and you know, by the end of the week, you've maybe revisited it five or six times, and you eventually get to something where you're not really making changes anymore. And I think when you get to that point, you begin to feel like you've got some confidence that what's there is pretty real. And then you can start taking that and reviewing it with people, or you know, beginning to make some preliminary explorations based off of it. And of course, as you get more information back, you can tweak as necessary. But I completely agree with you. It's all about getting some definition down on paper. And for people who, are staring at that blank piece of paper, it can feel really overwhelming. So something that I found really useful is there are all sorts of tests and exercises you can go through to help you get data initially that you can then use as a jumping off point. So there are, you know, personality tests out there like Myers-Briggs. There are aptitude tests out there. I mentioned a number of them in the book. I know there was one that you had me do when we first sat down together, and I actually can't remember the name of that test. Do you still use it? And if so, just give a brief description of what it does.
Sure, I do. It's a Success Insights report, and there's actually two components to it. One is a behavioral style tool, so you understand what your natural style is, and that helps you not only in figuring out what's going to be potentially a good fit career-wise, but also how other people are likely to perceive you or how you're likely to perceive other people along the way. So, for instance, someone who's very introverted may struggle with having to go out and meet new people or to ask folks to just talk with them informationally or things. We know that that's going to be a challenge for them, so we talk about strategies for how to overcome those challenges. And then the other piece to that is a workplace motivators or a values report. What's really important to you? You mentioned earlier the midlife crisis hitting. That is not an unknown thing that happens to some folks. And I often find that when that's most likely to happen is when someone is going down a career path that is not fulfilling their just fundamental core values of what is their motivators in life. And so if they can find some ways, either in their current job or down a different path, so that those day-to-day needs are met more, like whether it's you like doing new things or you like to be seen as being in a role of power, or you like to be learning new things, or you like to be socially in an environment where you can do social good for other people. Whatever those may be, they need to be met, or else you do have that "what am I doing" kind of feeling, like what's the point of all this?
Great. Well, look, let's switch now from if somebody has used tools like that and a number of the other exercises we've mentioned here, and again, for those listening, we're really talking about the step one section in the book that's been launched. So all of these exercises and more are cataloged in there. And so if you get the book, you can see the specific tests and methodologies that we're talking about. So let's say somebody's actually done the work and they feel like they've got a pretty good understanding of their core attributes, their core strengths, their core values. How do they then go about beginning the visioning process by saying, okay, if I am this type of person, how do I begin painting a picture of the type of life I want to have and where my career work fits within that? What exercises are particularly helpful there?
Well, I think that vision of the future can be quite helpful of saying, okay, I'm not going to worry about what skills I have or where I live right now or what my life looks like right now, but if I project out 20 or 30 years, what would I want it to look like then? Or maybe it's just 10 years. If you say, well, what do I want it to look like next year? That you're so enmeshed in your life right now, it's hard to think what it could be and to try to envision it being very different. So you need to go out far enough to say, what would it, in a perfect world, let's just kind of say, what would I like it to look like? Like, where do I want to live? What do I want my day-to-day routine? Do I want to have lots of people around me? Do I want to be helping younger people? Do I want to be learning new things? Do I want to be building something? Do I want to work with my hands? But to kind of picture what that environment is like so that you can start to picture yourself in that environment. And then in crystallizing that with the seven stories or some of the other exercises that you articulate in the book, you kind of start to see where there are threads that start to connect what is right now with what you want it to be in the future. And one other thing, Adam, I did want to touch on before we got too far away from it, which is that you mentioned that feeling of like there's this blank piece of paper and I need to put my life down in words here. One thing that can be helpful is to just sit down and set a timer for 20 minutes and say, oh, I'm not going to do the whole thing right now. I just want to knock out just a quick draft of my first thoughts in 20 minutes and just knock it out, just write down whatever comes to mind for 20 minutes and then set it aside and then do another 20-minute stint. And that way it can help break through that complete gridlock that tends to happen sometimes when you're trying to write on the spot and create the perfect summary of your life.
I'm really glad you mentioned that because you're exactly right. And one of the really key strategies here is breaking all of the work down into digestible sort of bite-sized steps. You're really trying to sort of answer again some very big existential questions and ultimately make a pretty big change in your life. And as we've mentioned, it feels really daunting. And so the less you can make it feel like this massive solution that is on your shoulders that you need to resolve right now, and you realize that it's just a procession of many steps, and each individual step is doable. It really, A, lets you begin to take action, and B, it really begins to lessen some of the pressure as well. And I think it's also important that we let people know that, if you are making a true career transition, you need to really expect that it's going to take about a year from beginning to end. And of course, that can be shortened by, serendipity for sure and other things. And I was very fortunate and mine probably took about 6 months, which honestly I think is probably relatively rare. And again, serendipity played a pretty big role there. And I think, for other careers transitions, it could certainly take longer than that, particularly if there's certain types of education or credentials that you need to get. So you need to embrace the fact that it's a marathon, and a marathon is really a sum of a bunch of individual steps. And just start by taking those individual steps. Don't feel like you've got to solve it all right away. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
And a related point on that, and you had mentioned earlier in the podcast about sometimes people never make the change, and yet they feel discomfort or they're not happy, but they can never get off dead center to sort of make something start to shift. And as we were saying, these are the first steps to take. But even if that's the case, where they say, I just can't even get myself to sit down and try to write answers to some of these questions, then just use that writing time to say, why? What is the fear? And just address that. Because sometimes what happens is people say, well, I just, and I say, just write it down. And they'll say, well, if I do this, then I will have to make a change. And I'm scared to make a change. Or, you know, and they just write several pages about what all their fears are. And that's okay, because you can work with that, too. It's the same thing. Getting the fears out on paper tends to diminish them right there.
Yeah, they begin
and
to feel less overwhelming.
It makes it much easier to address them and say, okay, well, would I really need to do that? Would I? No, I guess I could. No, I could take this stuff, and that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to walk away from my, you know, fantastic job right now, and everyone's going to look at me askance. You know, it just... All it is just writing it on paper.
Yeah. Well, and something you said, too, about the process, personally for me, as I mentioned, it at first was really painful to try to distill myself down to words on a page because it just felt so limiting. And of course, it turns out to be just the opposite. It becomes very enabling because once you have that insight, you can begin to make decisions with confidence, which is one of the things that prevents a lot of people from actually, you know, really committing to the career transition process in the first place. But I found that once I switched from the self-description, once I finally felt like I had a pretty good idea of really what my key core components were, and I began to do the visioning work, that's where the process actually began to become fun for me, where I began to realize that, you know, a different future was possible. You know, some of the things about my life that I was really dissatisfied with through my work, and I began seeing a path, and right now it might have been an idealized one, but I just had a picture of a future in which, you know, some of these limiting factors were gone, and I was spending more time in areas that were more personally meaningful for me. It really injected a sense of optimism, possibility, and eventually enthusiasm for this. So, I want to let people know that it's all work, but some of this work is actually, you know, really heartening and really, really fulfilling work. And I think largely it becomes more so the further you get into the process and begin to realize that you've got a vision and that vision is actually attainable.
That is so true. And it's a really good point, Adam, that usually when someone first says, I think I need to make a change, they're usually in a bad place. Like emotionally, they're like, oh, what, you know, I'm down this path, or I'm just so unfulfilled, and I don't know what I want to do. I just feel lost. It's a really miserable place to be in. And then what happens so often is kind of what you described is people, as they start to get thoughts out and to realize, oh my gosh, there's a whole lot of different ways I could go here, most of which would be more fulfilling than this path I'm on right now, that it's not uncommon that people go through almost a euphoric stage, and they're just, as suddenly the world opens up to them, as they're like, oh my gosh, I could do this, or I could do this, or I could do this, and they start to see, like, here's all these different paths, and I can now, it's sort of permission to explore and to kind of play with, like, what would it be like if I were to do this? What would it be like, which is often the next step, is I'll say, just start to talk to people that are in that area or doing work similar to this, or, you know, start to research this one thing that you're kind of intrigued by. And I tell them any information is good, because either you'll get drawn to it more and you'll feel like, yeah, this is so great, this is very much what I want to do, or this feels the right direction. Or you'll be repelled, going, oh, this is so not what I thought. This sounds awful. I don't want to do this. And that's okay. It's all information. So if you have the negative reaction, then you say, okay, that path is not for me. Let me focus on these others that I'm going to continue to explore. But that stage of euphoria is a really common one, where people have that sense of, I'm free now, and I can really set my own course.
No, that's great. So, I'm sensitive to the fact that there's still so much about the process that we're not going to have a chance to talk about in this podcast, although I've loved the material we've covered so far. So two things. Just in the interest of time, I'm going to move on. But I really do hope, Jennifer, that we can have you on again at some point in the future, because, you know, we probably really just scratched the surface of the main steps that people go through. And I think there's so much more you have to continue to contribute here. So I'm going to plant that seed, and hopefully we can take you up on that again in the future.
Okay. I'd be happy to.
Thank you. I do want to build on what you just mentioned, that euphoric phase, is common here, and I hope for most folks that actually sounds really encouraging, because probably if you haven't made the transition yet, you're probably, you know, dealing with a fair amount of angst. So there is definitely some real positive aspects to this transition.
There's light at the end of the tunnel.
There's light at the end of the tunnel. Now what's important, though, and you really helped me understand this, is in the middle of the process, I mentioned in the book we divide it into three stages, and the middle is called navigating the fallow period. And I want you to describe that more in just a moment, because I believe I got that terminology from you. But a really important part about this process is you want to gather as many data and insights as you can up front to be able to follow your compass points and make decisions based upon a framework and whatnot. And then there are very, very tactical steps that you'll take at the end when it comes down to actually identifying specific, you know, jobs at specific companies and going after them. But there's this middle section where you're really just kind of swirling in all the information you've gathered before. You're still looking out at the world and trying to figure out of the big wide world, you know, where's the territory that holds promise for you. You don't have concreteness yet in terms of industry yet, perhaps, or companies, or exactly the specific type of work you're doing. And a really important part of the process is there's this uncertainty, and that's okay. In fact, that's actually necessary, that the way the brain processes information is it sometimes really needs to sift through what you're taking in many ways in sort of an unconscious or subconscious process. And so while you might feel like you're spinning and maybe even taking, you know, a couple of steps back progress-wise, that's natural, and it's really needed for things to begin to gel for you. At least that's what I took away. Comment on this, if you will.
Absolutely. And I would love to take credit for the term the fallow period, but it's actually very attributable to William Bridges, who wrote a book called Transitions. It's a very short, small book, and I would recommend it to people in thinking about going to a transition, and definitely those that are in the fallow period, because he really coined that phrase and talks extensively about it. It is a stage where, as you articulated, you've done a lot of research, but you don't know the answer yet. And especially most of my clients are they're typically pretty senior. They're very accomplished. They're used to getting a lot done. They're being very take charge. And so it can be frustrating and concerning that they don't have the answer. And especially if, gosh, we spent several hours talking about it. Don't we have an answer now? Don't I know what the answer is? And as you point out, you need to let that settle in, and you need to spend time living with these different potential paths you could go on and not push that too much, that you need to give yourself time to think about that. So in addition to like the William Bridges book, Transitions, there's another book I think is very helpful in this kind of a stage. It's a book by Julia Cameron, who's a film writer, and she wrote a book called The Artist's Way. And that book is very helpful as well, because she talks about doing something called what she calls the artist date, which is where you once a week do something that just kind of feeds your soul, that there's no goal to it, there's no accomplishment you need to do, but it's something to help you connect with yourself. And those types of things, those types of exercises help get you back in touch with what's important to you, and in subtle ways that you can't force. You can't force it. Like an artist date literally might be going to a museum. It might be going and taking a tennis lesson because that's something you always wanted to do and you just never had time to, you know, or just doing something that's just fulfilling to you just because you enjoy it. But taking care of yourself in that way is very important. And similarly to what we were talking about earlier, being careful who you're surrounded with, it can be enormously helpful in this stage in particular to find other like-minded folks, other people going through transition or that have been through a transition, so know what it is like to go and do an artist date together, but where you can talk about your feelings and what it's like to be in this you know, odd stage. Sometimes career groups are formed to do that, and that can be very, very helpful. I know when I was going through one of my career transitions, I worked with a career counselor. She had a group that we met, I think, over 6 weeks or something. And I was in touch, and some of those folks I am still in touch with to this day, and that was a long time ago, because it's such a bonding experience. But sometimes, getting back to our earlier discussion, your current contacts and people that you're talking to, your good friends, may not be the best choice for these kinds of things right now, because they're not going to understand necessarily what you're going through, and they may be threatened by it, because they may see you going in a very different path, and that can subtly be upsetting to them, in that may remind them they're not so happy in their career either.
Meaning, so, that might translate into some, perhaps even unconscious, sort of sabotaging of your success.
Yes, because there's a little bit, there can be jealousy, there can be, and rarely is it meant in a mean-spirited way or a conscious way. What I'm talking about is much more subconscious, but it feels sort of threatening. For the same reason, many times a spouse is not the best person to help you with this kind of transition. Because if you're thinking, especially if you are someone who's, you know, had big jobs, big, powerful, high-paying jobs, and you may well have another big, high-paying job, but it may be quite different, and you don't know what that transition is going to look like between now and then, that can be very frightening to a spouse, especially if they're a stay-at-home spouse or, you know, whatever. All of a sudden, it's really hard for them to be like, oh, yes, you know what, just take some time, figure that out. They may try, and many times they do try really hard, but it's really scary to them. And so it's sometimes better to not put that burden on them to be sort of your sounding board for some of these things. Mm-hmm. It's great to have them be a sounding board for some things, but not too much, because they are so heavily invested in the outcome that it's just hard for them not to feel fear around that.
Well, I think that's great insight, and certainly you're speaking from a lot of experience on this. You know, in the book, we talk about the support network that you want to build to see you through this process. Key to that is, or at least a very important component of that, is having a career coach or a career guide, somebody who's got some perspective on how this process works, who can be an impartial sounding board for you, and more importantly, can bring, you know, the voice of experience in terms of what to expect and also, helpful skills, techniques, et cetera, that you can employ. I guess two questions for you on this is, if you could just clarify a little bit further, what really is the role of a career coach here? And is it something that everybody should have? And if so, for those that don't feel they can afford one, what are their options?
A career coach is essentially a guide and a sounding board through much of this process. So a career coach can tell you things like, oh, expect that this is going to feel, you know, difficult, or that this part you may go through a period of euphoria, or, you know, this part may be tough for you given that you're an introvert, or this part may be hard because you're an extrovert, or whatever it is. They can help with a lot of that. They are removed, so they can see you more objectively. They're not going to have a sort of a panic reaction if you say, well, what if I don't work for 6 months? They're not going to be like, oh my God, you know. They would just logically say, well, what are your cash reserves? You know, okay, well, sounds like maybe you shouldn't take 6 months off. You know, I mean, they'll just be more objective about it and not as much self-involvement in it, because they are more removed. So I think it can be a wonderful resource. The career coaches all are different. We're all, you know, just folks. And so we have our own personalities and our own style, and this is a very, very personal process. So I do think if you are going to work with a career coach, it's a very good idea to talk to several. Just because they'll always do at least a short, you know, conversation with you on the phone or something like that. Not a session, but just, you know, a quick, you know, kind of conversation and talk about how they work. So you just see if it's a good fit for you. And if it's not, it's okay. Go on to someone who is, so that you feel very comfortable and like they're the right guide and sounding board for you in this process. But they're not. It's not imperative that you have a career coach. That it isn't. It can be very helpful to have others, as you point out, that have been through the process. But look for folks that have done transitions somewhat similar to what you're doing. So if you're doing a big transition to something quite different, maybe to something entrepreneurial when you've been a big company person before, or sometimes it goes the other way. You've been very entrepreneurial, now you really want to get in a big company for a while. Try to find someone who's done that kind of a shift, because they will be most helpful for you and least discouraging to you. Some folks have always been pretty straight and narrow in their path. They started out as a big company person, and they've been a big company person, and they're not going to have great insights, and in fact may be very discouraging to you if you're saying you want to do something quite different. And so I do think it's important to get really folks that are going to have the right input. And sometimes it's folks that don't know you terribly well, because, again, they can have more objectivity, and they're not as closely enmeshed. Friends, while they mean well, unless they have some expertise in this area, are often not your best resource on this. But there's always exceptions to that. There's some that are great. But sometimes they have too much skin in the game, and they kind of really want to see you do such and such. They'd really like to see you do this other thing, because they feel it's the right thing for you. And chances are they're not exactly right. But yeah, just go with your gut feel on that, though, because sometimes a friend can be a great resource.
All right, great. Jennifer, again, thank you so much for the time here. And thank you so much again for all the guidance you gave me personally. But I think that there's so much material here that we have yet to get into that I think will be additionally beneficial to people that are, you know, wrestling with this decision themselves. I'd love to have you back on within a month or two, if that works for you. For the folks listening to this, Jennifer's a very busy person. I'll work with her offline here to see if we can't get her back on again. And if you have questions that you'd like her to address, if we are able to get her back on, please certainly submit them to us either in the comments section along with this podcast, or you can just email me directly. Jennifer, in closing, for those who are listening here and are considering beginning their own transition, what resources would you direct them to?
Well, I would certainly direct them to your book. I think that's a wonderful resource for all of this kind of stuff. The other books, some that I mentioned earlier in the podcast, and there's also the books, the 5 O'Clock Club books, and I think that you draw on them somewhat in your work as well, Adam. And those books, I find there's a lot of career books out there, and many of them are pitched kind of too low for more senior executive-type folks. And so the 5 O'Clock Club books, they're very inexpensive. They're like $12 or something on Amazon. The author is listed as Kate Wendleton. I think I don't think she's the only person that wrote them. I think it's kind of the company, the 5 O'Clock Club, that wrote them. But there's one called Targeting a Great Career, which has a number of good exercises in it, and another one that's called Shortcut Your Job Search is another really good one that I think are good. And one of the reasons I like them is because they have a lot of case studies, so that can be a great thing, because I find that when people read case studies, it really gets them thinking about, like, oh yeah, that's kind of similar to me. I think, oh, I see how that can work, or I see how they approach that. Like, that's why when we started at the beginning and I asked you, how did you get Ron Paul on? Because I love to hear the path of how you made that work, because you learn something every time about how you can make something happen even when it initially seems like it's not going to happen.
Great. Well, and for those listening, this morning we had our podcast with Ron Paul. It may not have aired on the site by the time this interview airs, but it's a great example of really a dream come true. Ron Paul, somebody that I had targeted as somebody that I would like to get some exposure to, really, as I was formulating the vision for Peak Prosperity with Chris, and being able to actually talk with him today is a really nice milestone in terms of taking that vision that I had created during my own transition process and actually finally making it a reality in my life. Took a number of years, but worth celebrating, and I really appreciate you bringing that up here, Jennifer.
Sure.
Great. Well, thank you so much. For those that are listening, as I mentioned earlier, there is a book that's been written by yours truly on the very methodical process that Jennifer and I have been talking about here at a high level. And it covers everything from the self-exploration and visioning work that we talked about to some areas that we didn't talk about in as much depth, all the steps that happen during that fallow period in terms of recruiting your support network, all the resources you need to have in place, beginning to take the insights from the first stage and beginning to identify specific careers and industries that might be good fits and beginning to winnow that list down. And then the last stage, which is really all about, you know, going after specific companies, specific job positions, specific type of work, and actually, you know, officially transitioning into your new, more authentic career. That book will have a description and links to it within the write-up to this podcast. It'll also be on other places on Peak Prosperity. It will also be on Amazon. And the title to it is Finding Your Way to Your Authentic Career. Jennifer, thank you so much again, both for today's insights and all the help that you gave me along my journey. I look forward to having you again on the podcast. And thank you again. I really appreciated the time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Adam.